Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the State Bank Financial Corporation results for the first quarter 2016 conference call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Thursday, April 28, 2016. I would now like to turn the conference over to Joe Evans, Chairman and CEO. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Tina. Good morning, and thank you all for joining our call. With me on the call today are President Tom Wiley, Chief Financial Officer Sheila Ray, Chief Credit Officer David Black, and Head of Corporate Development David Brown. I'm going to talk about our strategic priorities and the progress we made during the quarter, give you some additional detail on the National Bank of Georgia transaction, and then Sheila will discuss the first quarter results in more detail. David's then going to give a wrap-up with the loan portfolio and asset quality metrics. After they finish with their prepared remarks, Tom and David Brown will be available to answer questions in the follow-up. Our first quarter earnings press release and slide presentation that we'll reference on this call are all available in the investor section of our website, statebt.com. And as usual, I need to remind you that the comments we make on this call are subject to our cautionary note regarding forward-looking statements in the press release and also on slide 2 of the earnings presentation. Now turning to slide 4. I'm really pleased with the way this year is starting out. We've got positive results on all fronts. I'm pleased with the trends in our fee income business, which in aggregate were up 16% over the prior quarter. Mortgage, SBA, and payroll were all up measurably, with payroll having yet another record quarter. While revenue from the seasonality of tax reporting is a recurring first quarter lift in the payroll business, our first quarter payroll revenues in 2016 were 15% higher than they were a year ago. Derek Whitworth, who heads our Alterra payroll division, has recently been given the additional responsibility of leading our insurance program. While insurance is not yet meaningful in its contribution to revenues, I expect that to change under Derek's leadership. Our SBA business, led by Alan Toms, continues to perform very well. According to reports put out by the SBA, for the six-month period ending 3/31/2016, State Bank ranked second for SBA 7(a) production in the state of Georgia, well ahead of our regional competitors. As announced last week, a Raleigh-based SBA team led by Brad Turner has joined Allen's State Bank team, and we look forward to a meaningful increase in SBA revenue going forward. We've got a very high regard for Brad and his team and think they'll be a great fit with us. This addition expands our geographic reach. It adds significant expertise in some specific lending verticals and accelerates implementation of some technology in the SBA area. I'm very pleased to have Brad and his team join us. Turning our focus to core deposits and funding mix, we continue to make solid progress in growing non-interest-bearing demand deposits and transaction accounts. Average non-interest-bearing deposits have increased for 16 straight quarters and have crossed the 30% line as to percentage of total deposits for the first time. I continue to believe that our ability to integrate payroll, treasury services, and cash management capabilities for clients is a tremendous competitive advantage for us and is a big driver of our success. Sheila will discuss efficiency in more detail, but expenses declined once again as we continue to see very positive results from the efficiency actions we initiated last year. We posted another strong quarter of loan originations this quarter, leading to $98 million of growth in outstandings. And I'm particularly pleased with the contribution of our Patriot Capital Equipment Finance division, which we added in the fourth quarter of last year. In addition to loan production that's exceeding our forecast, The entire company is benefiting from Chris Sani's energizing leadership and his expertise in growing scalable assets. Every one of our four strategic priorities, fee income, core funding, efficiency, and loan growth, showed solid progress in the first quarter, and overall, I couldn't be more pleased with the way our team is executing. Moving on to slide five, on April 5th, we announced a very healthy bank acquisition for which we have high expectations. Headquartered in Athens, Georgia, National Bank of Georgia is a $407 million asset bank with only two branches, one in Athens and one in Gainesville, Georgia, two dynamic MSA markets immediately adjacent to Atlanta to the northeast. We really like this bank. As was the case with Bank of Atlanta and First Bank in Augusta, we have a long history with the bank and hold its leadership in the highest regard. They run an efficient operation, having a $400 million bank with only two branches, and they have a very compatible credit culture that we know well. We've participated in loans with them for years and think that Tom Lanier is one of the best community bank credit people that we know. Bill Hopper and his team at National Bank of Georgia are going to be a great fit for State Bank. Athens and Gainesville are attractive growing communities that will be very positive additions to our footprint. After Atlanta, they represent the second and third largest banking markets in North Georgia and have economies that thrive on different economic drivers than our existing markets. This will be healthy diversification for us. On slide six, we provided some additional details about the transaction. The transaction consideration is $45.45 a share, which is approximately $68 million for the outstanding shares and options. The consideration mix is 50% cash and 50% stock, as long as State Bank is between $18 and $21 a share. If the value of our shares falls below $18, then the deal becomes 100% cash. At that price, we're not inclined to give our shares away. If we trade above $21, then the exchange ratio becomes fixed on the stock consideration at 2.164 times each share of for State Bank. The transaction value is approximately 1.6 times fully diluted tangible book value per share and 14.1 times trailing 12-month earnings, with a core deposit premium of roughly 8.8%. It's right in line with market, and with the high degree of strategic and cultural compatibility we feel, we think this is going to be a very great and excellent value for us. What really matters when you look at the price of a deal is how much of their business sticks and does it grow post-closing, and we feel very positive about both those metrics. Assuming the deal closes with a 50-50 cash stock mix, we anticipate 4% tangible book value dilution with a payback of approximately 4 years and 2017 earnings accretion of 9%. Should the transaction become all cash, we'll slightly extend the payback to 4.5 years, but the 2017 earnings accretion will rise to 12%. We've assumed and jointly identified 20% cost savings in this analysis, and as usual, we've assumed no revenue synergies in our analysis, and our loan growth projections are based on their historical growth rates at NBG. And quite honestly, I'll be disappointed if we don't get some lift on both those metrics. We've consciously taken a slightly more dilutive approach up front by using some cash consideration. The trade-off is greater earnings accretion, improved pro forma leverage, improved ROE, and less future dividend payments. This transaction has been unanimously approved by the boards of both companies, and we anticipate the transaction will close in the third quarter of 2016, pending all customary regulatory and shareholder approvals. Again, we believe this is another positive transaction for both parties, and with that, I'll turn the presentation over to Sheila.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm going to pick up on slide seven with results from the first quarter, which, as Joe mentioned, was a strong start to the year with net income of $10.8 million or 29 cents per diluted share. Total interest income on loans and invested funds, excluding accretion income, was up 2% from the fourth quarter of 2015 and 16%, or $4 million, from the first quarter of 2015, due primarily to strong organic loan growth as we continue to replace accretion income with traditional interest income. Additionally, we purchased 270,715 shares of stock at a weighted average price of $18.94 under our current buyback authorization. However, the majority of those shares, are just over 247,000, were purchased after quarter end, so sometime in April. Turning to slide 8, accretion income declined $4.5 million to $9.7 million as we did not have any loan pools closing out in the first quarter compared to $4.1 million in gains from loan pool closings in the fourth quarter of 2015. Base accretion was $6.1 million and declined $280,000 from the fourth quarter of 2015. Non-interest income increased and is a bright spot, as Joe mentioned, to $9.4 million in the first quarter. That's led by mortgage, SBA, and payroll revenue, which were all higher compared to the prior quarter and the first quarter of 2015. Mortgage production was $117 million in the quarter, which led to $3 million in fee income. The SBA group's production was just over $20 million in the quarter, compared to just $8.5 million in the first quarter of 2015. This resulted in a 34% increase year-over-year in SBA revenue when you compare the quarters. Payroll fee income increased 15% year-over-year to $1.3 million as the number of clients increased nearly 10% over the same time period. If we turn now to slide 9, you'll notice that we have made significant progress with respect to expenses and continue to reap benefits from the efficiency actions that we announced last year. Non-interest expense, excluding loan collection and OREO costs, which tend to be a little bumpy, declined $1.8 million, or over 6% from the previous quarter, to $28.4 million, with the decline largely due to $1.2 million in lower salaries and benefit costs. Keep in mind that expenses related to growth and revenue-producing opportunities will partially offset cost savings and could actually increase expenses going forward. But given that production revenues are correlated with expenses within our key fee income initiatives, we remain intently focused on our efficiency and burden ratios. The burden ratio is non-interest expense less non-interest income as a percentage of average assets. This ratio declined to 2.26% in the first quarter from 2.46% in the previous quarter. We are continuing to make solid progress on this front and remain on track to achieve our 12 to 18-month target of a burden ratio at or below 2%. We're focused on this ratio to ensure that during periods of revenue declines, we also have expense declines. Before I turn it over to David, I want to briefly talk about deposit funding on slide 10. As Joe mentioned, we continue to experience solid growth in transaction deposit accounts, including non-interest-bearing deposits, which comprised over 30% of total deposits at quarter end. Average total deposits grew $11.7 million from the previous quarter and $138.4 million from the previous year. As we mentioned on our last call, one of our 2016 priorities focuses on growing total deposits throughout our footprint, targeting new client relationships and increasing market share. During the quarter, we tested some deposit promotional rates in time deposits and business money market accounts, which resulted in some shifting of balances and reversed the declining trend in time deposits. Our preference is to grow funding in lower cost products, but we occasionally use rate-driven products to expand our customer base in an otherwise sleepy rate market. This concludes my remarks, and I'm now going to turn the discussion over to David.
Thank you, Sheila, and good morning, everyone. I'll begin on slide 11, covering loan growth. Our organic and purchased non-credit impaired loans grew at $104 million, or 5%, in the first quarter, including the offset of a $6 million decline in the purchased credit impaired portfolio. Total loans were up $98 million, or 18% annualized, with diverse growth across virtually all lines of business, geographies, and call codes. Total loans increased $258 million year-over-year, which is net of $51 million of contraction in the purchase credit impaired portfolio. On the bottom of this slide, you'll see that originations in the quarter matched the third quarter's record high at roughly $450 million. We also experienced the second highest quarterly level of paydowns, reflecting a healthy churn given the short-term nature of most of our loans. Slide 12 provides a view of the loan mix change quarter over quarter. Commercial real estate continues to comprise the majority of total loans. However, there is significant diversity across asset class, sponsor, source of repayment, and geography. We are attentive to internal subcategory concentration limits, as well as CRE-specific stress tests consistent with interagency guidance. Additionally, we continue to experience growth from non-CRE categories, including C&I and lease portfolios, which increased 34% and 31% respectively this quarter. This growth was driven by a successful quarter in the traditional commercial bank, as well as some pool purchases by our specialized finance team. Patriot Capital, which originates fully amortizing, primarily five-year maturity, equipment finance agreements, originated over $13 million this quarter at attractive yields, putting it on pace to handily exceed our initial projections. Turning now to slide 13 and referencing table 5 in the press release, credit metrics across the entire portfolio remain sound. Organic non-performing loans were $9.4 million, representing 50 basis points of total loans. While the uptick in NPAs this quarter represents a large percentage increase, the nominal movement is relatively modest, and we are still well below peer levels. This increase in NPAs is primarily related to a small number of loans that we viewed as prudent to downgrade to substandard non-accrual and is not indicative of a broader negative migration in the portfolio. We recorded an organic provision of $1.5 million in the quarter, influenced by loan growth and an increase in specific reserves for impaired loans, with the allowance as a percent of loans staying essentially flat or down just one basis point to 1.19%, which covers organic NPAs by 2.4 times. Purchased non-credit impaired loans, which as a reminder came from Bank of Atlanta and First Bank, continue to perform well, with non-performing PNCI loans at just $2.6 million and past dues declining to 30 basis points from 39 basis points in the prior quarter. Transitioning to the purchased credit impaired portfolio, PCI loans totaled $150 million at the end of the first quarter, down from $146 at the end of the fourth quarter, and down 27% year over year as these loans continue to be successfully resolved. The diligent efforts of our team in special assets led to recoveries on PCI loans exceeding $3 million for the second straight quarter. The earn back of all charges associated with the early termination of loss share will be achieved prior to the end of this quarter, the second quarter of this year, exceeding our initial estimates. Additionally, we recorded a negative provision on PCI loans for the third straight quarter, reflecting overall improving cash flow expectations. Our total allowance of $30.3 million is essentially flat from the first quarter of 2015, while separate and distinct calculations, optically, the reserve release in the PCI portfolio has offset reserve build in the organic portfolio without a material impact to earnings. Wrapping up, we are encouraged by the fundamental economic trends in the markets we serve, and while the competition for quality assets is increasingly intense, our teams are well positioned to build upon the momentum shown in the first quarter. I'll now turn it over to Joe to go to Q&A.
Thank you, David. And Tina, if you would open the line for questions, we're ready to move to that part of the program.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question or comment, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you're using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for our first question. Our first question comes from Jennifer Dembra of SunTrust. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning. David, could you give us a little bit more color on the loans that went on non-accrual this quarter? You said it sounds like there's no trend in terms of industry or geography.
No, Jennifer, I wouldn't say there's the relatively unique circumstances for each individual loan in the movement, so nothing discernible from a trend or migration standpoint. We feel like that there's appropriate attention being paid to these loans, and if it goes to the further deterioration, we feel like the loss given default is very manageable.
Okay, and how many loans was it?
I don't have the specific numbers in front of me, Jennifer. It's a nominal amount. The one loan in particular is the predominance of the movement.
Okay, and how big was that loan? Approximately.
$4 million.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kevin Fitzsimmons of Hovde. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Hey, Kevin.
Just wondering if we could give a little more color on the margin. So on both maybe the core and the reported basis, look like the core margin accretion expanded this quarter. So just curious how you're thinking about that going forward. And then when we look at that quarterly accretion income amount, I know that's a very tough thing to gauge, especially when it comes down to the loan pools closing or not, but how we should be, you know, if you were in our seat, how you'd be thinking about that $9.7 million accretion quarterly number. Thanks.
Sure. This is Sheila, and I'd be happy to talk about that. From a margin perspective, a couple of things I think happened this quarter. On the expense side, you didn't see a lot of movement, but the parts changed a lot with time deposits kind of ticking up, but offset in expense by NIB also ticking up and some interest bearing going down. I think we'll be pretty solid there. On the yield side, we had a nice uptick in investments during the quarter, primarily because spreads widened on some CLOs. And so we were happy to be able to participate there. We also had a good shift of earning assets up into loans, obviously, out of just cash. And our cash we continue to manage down, so that's helped. We didn't have a great pickup this quarter from fee income, which we would normally have, so we think there's still some upside there. On an accretion standpoint, we actually spend a lot of time looking at that, as you might imagine. And we believe that for this year, you're going to continue. The base accretion we mentioned went from $6.4 million last quarter to $6.1 million this quarter. So if you look at that trend, what we observe, and when you look at it and you compare it to the previous year, we noticed that the yield went down a little bit, but the assets declined pretty significantly during that time, about 28% in volume. So as you look and you continue to see some rundown there, I think you're going to continue to see that declining. I think it fell. The base accretion fell about $280,000 quarter of quarter. Recovery income fell about $110,000 during that same time period. So what you'll see is the recovery period and pools will obviously continue to be bumpy. We're probably still going to have some pool closeouts this quarter or this year, perhaps next quarter. I don't know for sure because the timing of those is hard to predict, as we've talked about in the past. But you'll see a nominal but gradual decline in the base accretion, probably similar to the rate that you saw this quarter. However, on the positive side, and what Joe and I were talking about before the meeting, the accretable discount at $86 million compared to $87 million is kind of, as Joe said, the gift that keeps on giving, and we are happy about that, and what guides that is the re-estimation each quarter on cash flows.
Got it. Okay, very helpful. Thanks, Sheila. One additional question, Joe, this one's for you. Just I know you guys outlined the deal and the dynamics behind that. I'm just curious what you're seeing more broadly in the state of M&A discussions. Whenever this topic comes up on calls in the past, you say that you guys are very careful about looking for the right deal, but they just take time. They take time to work with the management and picking the right time. So what do you think made it the right time for NBG to sell? And more broadly, how are you guys feeling the potential sellers are thinking out there? Are they, is it just down to pricing expectations, or are folks waiting until after the election and then deciding whether to pull the trigger?
When you've been talking to somebody for a couple of years, I don't know how long you dated your wife before you decided to get married, and I don't know what motivations pushed you across the threshold. But it's one of these things where you just, with a good long-term relationship, you just keep talking about it, and finally things line up. It's sort of an interesting aside. We've been involved with these folks since before they started the bank. When they organized the bank, I think in 2000, Tom and I were at Century South and had a long relationship with these folks at their prior bank. Their main office, which was the old Bank of America office in Athens, came available for sale, and they hadn't raised their capital yet. We bought the building for them and basically land banked it for them until they could raise their capital. We participated in loans with these folks with Tom Lanier-driven credits, probably going back 20 years. So this is a relationship that has just cooked and matured, and it finally stars aligned to a point that we all pull the trigger. We've got some other deals that have similar characteristics of long-term relationships that we feel pretty optimistic about. We don't do a lot of deals, but the deals that we do, we feel are strategic, are good relationships, and if you look at the track record, they've performed. And we believe that 2016 is going to be a good year for us in capital deployment.
Great. Thanks very much, Joe.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Christopher Marinek of FIG Partners. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everybody. I guess, Joe, to stay on the question of NBG and that transaction, is it possible that you have upside on the cost saves? I was just curious if the 20% figure is ultra-conservative or if there's a reason that was that level compared to past transactions you've done.
Now, wait a minute, but this is one where we just don't think we've got to push that number any harder. They come in the door with pretty good efficiency, and a $400 million bank with two branches walks in the door reasonably efficient. We're much more focused on helping them grow the revenues and the outstandings to the upside by the removal of some of the distractions that are just prevalent. When you're running a small bank, you've got the same regulatory distractions that we do with fewer people to pass the burden around to. These folks are good lenders. They're good asset generators. If you look at their deposit mix, it's a lot like ours. They're light on CDs. They're long on checking accounts and money market accounts. And we think that this team, with our capital base and the markets that they're in, have a lot of upside. And the last thing we want to do is to try to crank so much cost savings out of them that we demoralize them and diminish the upside. This is a growth opportunity more than a cost-saving opportunity.
Okay, great. That's helpful. And then if I look at the ongoing deposit evolution, do you see any sort of natural barrier that you can't get across in terms of whether it's DDAs or perhaps just looking at the overall kind of cost of funds?
Well, I think that just mathematically, we're probably around the bottom from a cost of funds standpoint. But from a growth in funds standpoint, I think we're just scratching the surface with commercial deposits in Metro Atlanta. The name recognition that we've gained in the past 7 years, the reputation that we've built and getting in front of more significant companies, the technology that we put together, a balance sheet that's easy to get larger depositors comfortable from a deposit concentration standpoint. We think there's a lot of upside for us in Metro Atlanta to grow the same kind of deposits that we've been posting for the last 7 years.
Great. Thanks very much, everybody.
But from a rate standpoint, I think we have pushed the floor of cost of funds by as low as we can.
Okay. Great, Joe. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Tyler Stafford of Stephens. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning, Tyler.
Hey, I wanted to start on SBA revenue expectations for 2016, just given the seven or eight guys you hired this quarter. I know you said meaningful growth this year. I was just curious if you could approximate or size that up for us at all.
I don't know that I want to stick my neck out any further than just saying it's going to be meaningful. There's a little bit of transition time of just getting processes and people acclimated to one another. But these folks have been a cohesive SBA team for a long time, and I think saying that it's going to be meaningful is about as far as we want to stick our neck out at this point in time.
Okay, that's fair. Sheila, I wanted to follow up on a comment I think you made on the buybacks. Did you say you've repurchased 240,000 shares just in April? And if so, any commentary on the pace of the buybacks we should be expecting?
Well, you know, it's dependent on the price. It's a 10b5-1 plan, so we're not actively managing it. Our representative is. So what we have done is gave them some guidance when we set the plan up, and they purchased a group of shares in April. That was the bulk of it. 247,441 shares were actually purchased in total, and it's at varying prices, but it blends down to just under $19 a share. The stock price then kind of started going up. I mean, you know, you're glad to see your stock price go up, but we also like buying our shares. So I think we've got the right metrics in place now. We were probably too conservative when we did this last year, and we recognize that. The dividend that we increased made us take a second look at the metrics, frankly, and we realized that we needed to adjust the pricing when we established the new plan, which we've done. So we've had some success, and depending on what happens with the market, which is anybody's guess at this point, I don't bet on that anymore. We hope to be able to buy some more.
Okay, and then last one for me, the tax rate, any outlook from there is fairly high in the first quarter. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you know, I noticed that too, Tyler, just to be honest with you, and it's something that we're going to look at and start working on. The nuances of the loss share and taxes have started to lessen as a impact on our effective tax rate, so that is something we're going to look at, and I can't really answer that right now. But it got my attention too.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, you can press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone keypad if you would like to register a question or comment. Once again, that is the 1-4. Our next question comes from Stephen Scouten of Sandler O'Neill. Please go ahead.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my question here. Curious with you on the loan growth, what the pipeline's looking like, and I think you might have mentioned there were some loan purchases in the quarter. Can you give us an idea what the scale of those purchases were within the specialty finance I think you mentioned?
Steve, this is Tom Wiley. A couple of things. First of all, pipeline does look good. Seasonally, first quarter is a little slow coming out the gates, and we actually had our most robust month in March. April looks good, and as we look down, and David Black mentioned earlier, is pretty much across all geographies, all collateral codes, and really just it's not just commercial real estate, which is encouraging, but it's coming from markets, and so I look for continued similar growth for the foreseeable quarters. Second part of the question?
We pretty actively bank some non-bank financial companies like Patriot Capital was, and like that side of our business, like the relationships we build with some of those companies.
Just to give you a sense of scale, Stephen, the note purchases from a net standpoint, or a specialty finance group, that component of the growth was less than $20 million of the total growth. And so that's just part of their business, whether it be individual note purchases or pools of small denomination notes that other institutions may want to dispose of from a concentration perspective or from structuring a transaction. But
okay.
While a consistent driver of growth, that wasn't the sole determinant of quarter-over-quarter growth.
Okay, so is that something that's kind of in the ballpark of a normal level for you guys, that sub 20 million per quarter?
Yes.
Okay, great. And then just in terms of the pace of the runoff of the acquired book, is this kind of 20 to 30 million per quarter? Would you say that's kind of what you expect to see from the runoff moving forward? I know there's some lumpiness, obviously, but I mean, is that kind of what y'all are thinking will transpire?
Yeah, I think a component of that is the optic is that it's runoff, but the reality is some of that is fueling organic growth, and so that piece of it, as we have a maturity or extending new credit to an existing relationship, that from an accounting classification standpoint would move from the purchase credit impaired to organic.
The other thing is that in the First Bank portfolio, there was a pretty good portfolio of construction loans that churned quickly. So those things paid off rapidly. So I think if you compare year over year, it went down quickly. That is going to slow somewhat because those construction loans have churned out. So we anticipated on the First Bank, we didn't see it churn down as quickly in Bank of Atlanta because they had no construction loans. In First Bank, the construction portfolio turned quickly.
Okay, great. Well, thank you guys very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Paul Miller of FBR. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, guys. Most of my questions have been answered, but I was just wondering real quick with the buybacks. You're not buying back stock until this deal closes. Am I correct?
The 10b5-1 plan, according to our counsel, can stay in place until we file our S-4, and then it will go into a quiet period and won't be able to buy back. And then after the deal closes, obviously, it'll pop back up again. But currently,
okay,
it is possible to continue, although at the current price level, it's not happening right now.
And what point do you feel that your stock is? Well, I don't want to answer like that. Where would you buy your stock up to? At what price?
I don't think we've publicly stated that, and I don't think we're at a point that we can state that right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. I know I'm kind of back in the corner with that question. But outside of this deal, I know you want to digest this deal. You still are relatively overcapitalized. Is there other deals behind this that you guys are looking at, or is just whatever, you know, shows itself at this point?
Yeah, like I said earlier, I expect 2016 to be a very good year for us in terms of capital deployment. There are things actively in discussion right now that we've got reasonable degree of optimism about.
Okay. Hey, guys, thank you for taking my questions.
All right.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as a reminder, it is a 1-4 to register a question or comment. Our next question comes from Nancy Bush of NAB Research. Please go ahead.
Good morning. I have a question about the payroll business. I mean, you referenced, I think, a 10% client growth in that business. You said they're also are sort of normal seasonal elements. And so if you could kind of split out. And secondly, on the 10% client growth, you know, what do you see as your competitive advantage right now that's, you know, that's enabling that kind of pretty robust growth?
Well, let me start with the back end of the question about what's propelling the growth. Being able to offer payroll in conjunction with the broader treasury payment services that we do and allowing a treasury client to pay all a part of their payroll processing costs with analysis charge and having treasury and payroll sales people that are conversant across that whole spectrum is really an interesting conversation to initiate with a lot of bank clients, both existing bank clients and also as a point of entry to new bank clients. That synergy between having a well-built-out treasury cash management platform that we believe competes, we can go head-to-head with any regional bank in Atlanta with our treasury capabilities, and to be able to integrate payroll processing in with that, it's just a really nice competitive package. While you run into every time, if you're out there just selling traditional bank services, there are a lot fewer payroll competitors of significance than there are banks of significance. And I've yet to run into any prospective client that had a brother-in-law on the board of ADP.
Okay. I get that.
And Nancy, one other thing we would be remiss not to mention is the impact of the Affordable Care Act. The tax filings required by the Affordable Care Act have been provided an increasing revenue opportunity for us, and we expect that to continue going forward. We provide a level of expertise and support to our clients that has created some run back from those that have left us because they found that they didn't get that same support elsewhere. So I think part of our competitive advantage is the level of service that we provide to our clients. We make their lives simpler. We help them run their business, and we take care of their tax filings under the Affordable Care Act and provide some consultative type service there that with our advent of adding that insurance component to the payroll piece, we're just going to get better at that, and that's a continuing opportunity for us.
Okay. And can you just separate, I mean, what would your normal lift have been in the normal seasonal lift have been in the first quarter, and, you know, how much can we attribute to, you know, client growth? If you can, you know, I understand if you can't split it out, but just a rough idea.
I think as Sheila said, first quarter this year versus first quarter of last year, we had a 10% growth in clients and a 15% growth in revenues.
Okay. Secondly, Joe, I would just ask you on, you know, a larger but related subject. I attended a conference in Atlanta last week on the whole issue of fintech in the community banking sector. And, I mean, you know, given that you already have, you know, some technologically sophisticated businesses, you know, under the umbrella there, I mean, how do you look at the whole subject of fintech? Do you see it as transformative to your company in any way, and how are you evaluating it?
Well, I think there'll be probably winners and losers in fintech. I see lots of them building efficient distribution models. I think it'll take a business cycle to tell how good they are at credit. They also, it's interesting, most of these fintech companies don't have any money. While they can generate assets, most of them have an issue of how they're going to fund those assets. And we've seen a number of interesting opportunities of putting together structured pools of purchases of assets from fintech companies where a private equity group buys a pool of loans and takes a meaningful subordinated position in the pool Very similar to the way we structured asset purchases from the RTC back in the last war.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, we think that, yeah, it's most of these fintech companies are doing kinds of loans that aren't our stock and trade, the smaller denomination credits. And one way or another, there's probably some that we're finding some opportunity for us in there, either in banking the companies, helping them fund the loans, potentially long-term acquiring some of these companies.
Right.
But I think it's going to take the passage of time to see if the credit metrics that they think they've mastered in their models holds up in the next downturn.
Do you see any particular regulatory? Have you seen any particular regulatory response yet to, you know, fintech on the community banking scene? I mean, that seems to me to be the choke point. You know, how the regulators are going to look at this, and how the regulators particularly going to look at community banks that are using fintech to maybe source outside their communities. Have you got any thoughts about that?
Nancy, this is Tom Wiley, and we have consciously stayed away from the consumer fintech business for that
right.
very reason, and have focused our attention on more business-to-business transactions. And
right.
while we haven't done a lot of it, we certainly think the environment is safer in that type of line versus
right.
consumer.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. We have no further questions at this time, so I'll turn the call back over to you for any closing remarks.
Very good. Thank you, Tina, and thanks to all of you for taking the time to join us on the call. Look forward to speaking with some of you in the interim and being here same time next quarter. Thank you very much.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. That does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect all lines. Thank you and have a good day.